You're listening to the Wine Country Live Morning Show with Barry Martin
on KVON Napa, 1440 AM at KVON.com.
And it is time once again for a visit with Dr. David Simon. It's Dr. Simon Says, and good morning to you.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Good to have you back. We had a good session last time around, and today we're going to spend a little bit of time on the topic of glaucoma. And T, I think you had your questions all teed up. You're ready to launch into this interview.
I am. Well, I think the first question is, for those who don't know, what is glaucoma?
Yeah. Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about glaucoma. This morning is one of my favorite topics. A lot of people live with glaucoma. They don't know they have glaucoma. And one of the important things about glaucoma is identifying it early. So as we talked about last time, getting these routine eye exams, you know, even if you think you don't have a problem, it's good to have an exam every 3 years. So it is, so what is glaucoma? We think about high blood pressure as sort of the silent killer. You can as my dad always used to say, you could wake up dead, right? So one day, you just have high blood pressure and you have a stroke, and that's a big problem. So we try to control it ahead of time. Glaucoma is similar in the sense that you can have a pressure in your eye that is too high for your eye. And over time, that can cause optic nerve atrophy. So glaucoma is basically a form of atrophy of your optic nerve. That's the nerve that goes from your eye into your brain. The atrophy, just like anywhere else in the body, you can get atrophy of your muscles if you're like me and you haven't worked out as much as you should. You can get atrophy of your nerves. And so one of the ways, and I think the best example with what happens in the optic nerve with glaucoma for patients is if you fall asleep on your arm the wrong way and you wake up, you can't feel your arm the next morning. Think about doing that for a whole year or for 5 years. You might never feel your arm or your hand the right way again, right? So if you push on a nerve the wrong way, you can actually get nerve damage and nerve atrophy. And every eye has a pressure. If you had no pressure in your eye would be like a squashed grape. You know, it's a great wine country analogy, right? But if you had no pressure, it'd be kind of like a raisin. It would be squashed. So it needs a little bit of pressure. But if it has too much pressure, it could be like a super ball. It could be really hard. And so, but somewhere in between that, you know, everyone has sort of the sweet spot of what's the right pressure for your eye. And so if your pressure is a little high, there's numbers we really used to focus on. But now we know that just different pressures in the eye are good for some people and too high for other people. And so when we identify that a pressure is too high for you, and we do that by a number of by eye exam to begin with, and then a number of screening tests that are typically done in the clinic. The classic one is everybody hears about the air puff test, and that's why they're afraid of going to the eye doctor, right? Because they get this puff of air and it scares them. And that air puff.
What's to be scared of from
yeah,
that?
I know. But the air puff test is just one of those ways that we screen in on the optometry side. Now, on the ophthalmology side, on my side, we don't tend to use the air puff. We actually we use anesthetic drops.
Wait, so you just spray air in someone's eyeball?
It's I don't do that. That's what more on the optometry side they use.
Okay.
They're more accustomed to using the air puff test. But in the ophthalmology world, we numb up the eye and we just kind of gently touch the eye with the device. And I don't want to go into too much detail.
But it makes me squeamish.
But we check your pressure, and it's really important to do that. So if we can get a pressure reading in everyone's eye, and we know if some pressures are a little bit on the higher side, some people have super high pressures and they just live with that. Like I said, the people with super high blood pressure, they just live with it until they have a problem. Some people just live with high eye pressure, and slowly they can lose vision. It typically affects the peripheral vision first. So we have, there are sharpshooters out there, people that can see, a gnat, you know, hundreds of feet away, okay, that can't drive a car because their peripheral vision is lost. And that's how glaucoma affects you. Oh. It doesn't really affect your central vision. It just slowly affects your peripheral vision. So you don't notice it.
So you're looking through a tunnel.
Right. And so that's really, and again, the importance is getting those routine eye exams, but that optic nerve atrophy can definitely affect vision. And again, what is it? It's something you're born with, a hereditary pattern or a pattern to get glaucoma typically, but we don't really get the effects of it until we get a little older, oftentimes, because the atrophy builds over time, usually. So that's again why the frequent exams are important.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, can you work out your eyes? I mean, you work them out naturally just by blinking and looking every day. So Was that a dumb comment? Eyes fascinate me.
Eye exercises?
Yeah.
Well, in a way, didn't they used to treat lazy eye by forcing the muscles to respond differently?
Sure. So lazy eye, different topic completely. But yeah, there's in the pediatric world, there's treatments, there's eye therapies for fixing things like lazy eye, different topic. But, you know, you talk about working out.
Yeah.
This is a great segue into kind of what causes glaucoma or what makes glaucoma worse. So we know that certain...
working out causes glaucoma.
Definitely not. Definitely not. Definitely not. But there's different theories of why the optic nerve is more susceptible to atrophy. And so maybe, you know, some people have a certain pressure reading and will never get glaucoma. Some people have that same pressure reading and they get glaucoma. Again, is it just heredity? Is it other factors? And so we know the blood supply to the nerve is important. So again, just like all the other things we think about in the body, ailments, things that affect us, good nutrition, keeping your blood pressure under control. And it's a really indirect relationship between blood pressure and eye pressure. But, you know, basically maintaining a healthy lifestyle, it does indirectly relate to people preventing things like glaucoma and a number of other things.
So can people without high blood pressure get glaucoma too?
For sure. And I was just really making an analogy with high blood pressure. It is not directly related. So there are plenty of people out there living with perfect blood pressures and really at low risk for all those high blood pressure issues that we can get that will get glaucoma. There are definitely people that, so again, and that's one of those things. It's sort of like I said, high blood pressure is the silent killer. The high eye pressure or glaucoma is sort of the silent blinder, if you will. Over time, it just slowly kind of creeps up on you.
So what are the main symptoms of someone that they would call you up and say, I'm experiencing
glaucoma. No.
Yeah.
that's it. You know, there are some forms of glaucoma and it's less than 5%. So 95% of glaucoma is the type I was describing. There's really no symptoms unless you really started noticing that you were an advanced glaucoma patient and you're starting to get some peripheral vision loss, which most people don't even notice, believe it or not, because like I said, they can see perfectly well in the distance.
Interesting.
I'm losing my train of thought.
I've got a question from a listener for you.
Yeah.
Text it over to me. Ask the doctor what glaucoma suspect is.
Yeah, that's a great question.
Okay.
So, and that is what many, many people get diagnosed with when they go to their eye doctors. Oh, you're a glaucoma suspect. You're going to require some further screening tests. So what a glaucoma suspect patient looks like, and it's kind of a funny name. It's a bad name, if you will. You're a suspect. It makes you sound
like you're
some kind of criminal or something. But it just means we're going to keep an eye on you. So you're a glaucoma suspect. You're somebody that is higher risk than the rest of the population to get glaucoma based on some really specific findings that eye doctors like myself can see when we look inside the eyes. So, and basically it's just a measurement or a dimension that I'm looking at as I'm looking at your optic nerve. So that's one neat thing about ophthalmology and optometry in general. We actually see the inside of the eye. We see nerves. We see blood vessels. We see blood pumping through the eye. You know, there's a lot of things we can see. So if I see certain hemorrhages in certain areas near the optic nerve, when I do the eye exam, if I see certain, like I say, the dimensions of ratios that I see within that optic nerve, these are clues that you might be high risk. So then I give you the title of glaucoma suspect. And that means that instead of coming in, you know, every 3 years or really when you need to see the eye doctor, you know, for vision changes, you should be coming in every year at least so that we can do these screening tests. And again, if you're just a glaucoma suspect, meaning you have these high risk factors, and it could be also because of your high pressure. If you have super high pressure when you come in, that also puts you in a glaucoma suspect status. But if you come in each year and you know everything is great, you know, year one, year two, year three, you're a glaucoma suspect. All your visual field tests, which is a peripheral vision test, checking that periphery. We do specific optic nerve studies as well in addition to that. But if all these things are looking normal year by year, but you're great. But there is typically a year where these glaucoma suspects patients, and a good percentage of them, a higher percentage than the rest of the population, will cross that line into having real glaucoma. And when they do cross that line, and how do they cross the line? By us finding certain changes on those studies. So, you know, you've changed over the past 5 years. Your baseline looked like this. Now you look like this. So you have early changes that put you into a glaucoma category. Then it's time to treat you. Now, what is treatment, right? So everybody says, right. Well, I've got glaucoma. Now you've labeled me as I was a glaucoma suspect patient. Now it's even worse. I'm a glaucoma
convicted.
Patient. I'm convicted, right. So what do I do? And it's really not that bad. It used to be, you know, in the old days, you know, 20 years ago, many of these people actually needed glaucoma surgery, whether it was laser or different procedures. Now, by and large, 99% of our patients that are glaucoma, legitimate glaucoma patients, can be treated successfully with just typically one eye drop a day, a medication eye drop that we prescribe. So by giving someone an eye drop, and whatever their pressure starts with, if we can reduce that pressure by a certain percentage, we know by a number of studies out there that we can dramatically decrease the chance of losing vision down the road.
And so do the eye drops like constrict the blood vessels or just not allow enough pressure to form in there?
So that's a wonderful question. So there's basically five different classes of medications that we use, and depends on, you know, some people are allergic to some people have reactions to some medicines, very rarely. But people, you know, some people can tolerate some medicines better than others. So, but different medicines work different ways. There's one of my favorite medicines. It's a once a day medicine. It just makes the eyeball, excrete the fluid a little bit easier. It just allows the fluid to leave the eye a little bit better. So the eyeball, okay, so let's get into my analogies. I love analogies. The eyeball is like a swimming pool, okay?
Okay.
Except with a swimming pool, you know, again, you have water coming in, water leaving, right? But if you get too much water, let's say your drain got plugged up by a bunch of leaves for some reason, and they were so strong that they didn't allow the water to leave. And so maybe the water could overflow, right? But there's no real overflow in the eyeball. It's an eyeball. It's a closed system. And so you have the water coming in, water leaving. And if there's something wrong with that filter that allows the water to leave the eye, which that's the main issue with many of these people with glaucoma. If the water's not allowed to leave the eye as quickly as it comes in, the pressure builds up. So all the treatment is focused on either decreasing the amount of water that goes in or increasing the amount of water that leaves. And so those are those five different medicines. They all work in different ways.
What percentage of people end up being glaucoma suspects or convicts?
Just of all comers coming into the clinic? Mm-hmm. That's a great question. You know, I think, you know, if we look at, again, all patients coming in, it's a number that's close to about, you know, 15-20% of our patients. Mm-hmm. It's a good amount of patients.
Mm-hmm. Primarily older, or because it's genetic, does it not matter?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's not just older patients. We see plenty of people that are glaucoma suspect patients in their 30s, in their 40s, you know, and these are people that, you know, have, you know, quote unquote, perfect eyesight, and they're healthy as a horse, right? And they're doing fine. But because they don't need to come see the eye doctor, they oftentimes just don't get the diagnosis until it's a little bit late.
Okay, so now you just scared me, because I'm in my 30s and I've never had a eye test.
Can you see my hand over
Yes,
there?
I can see your hand. So what age do you recommend going in to get an eye test at? Like, am I overdue?
So yes, the answer is yes. if you're saying that, you're probably overdue. I would say that, you know, like I said, every 3 years is a good idea to just get an eye exam. Mm-hmm. Even if it's just, you know, go into your corner, you know, eye doctor in the mall or something like that. But, you know, we do, of course, in my clinic, we do routine eye exams, everything from glasses to cataract surgery to LASIK to glaucoma treatment to macular degeneration treatment. So we can, you know, we can identify it early, and really, like I said, any eye doctor should be able to identify these things early.
Okay.
So, does cannabis help with glaucoma?
Well, that's a great question. We live in California, and we do know that pressure decreases a bit in patients that use cannabis. But it's not really a reliable decrease in the pressure, and so. When these medicines that we use, the eye drops, they are, there are many, many studies that are done to make sure that your pressure comes down to sort of an exact amount, if you will, and it stays low. So we worry about, you know, the diurnal curve of the pressure going up and down, up and down. Somebody on cannabis would you'd almost have to be on it all the time, every hour of the day.
Which is probably not a bad idea.
Right, for some people. But it's...
Look at the world around us.
you would have to, you know, even while you're sleeping, you'd have to have a healthy dose on board, because every time you would go to sleep, the pressure would start to go back up. And so it's really not a, it's not a great way. It's an excuse that many people come up with in reality, I don't think it's a great way to treat glaucoma.
Barry would use that excuse. Yeah, all right. We have another listener question for you. Why is the glaucoma test not usually covered by insurance? This listener says they normally ask me if I want to pay extra for the test, and I always say no because I generally can't afford it. Do I just have crappy insurance?
Good question.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that is a great question. It depends on what glaucoma test you're talking about, I guess. In our practice, with our with what we've seen with the majority of the insurance carriers, if you are in a glaucoma suspect status, your glaucoma screening tests are covered.
Okay.
It's typically not an issue if you have glaucoma, if you're in a glaucoma suspect status. Now the question is, if you're coming in for routine eye exam and you just need glasses and everything else is perfect, and by the way, the glaucoma screening test is part of that exam, the pressure reading we're talking about.
Oh, okay.
You know, whether it's the air puff or the easier method sometimes to tolerate, the eye pressure check is part of a routine eye exam.
Okay.
Typically, so when you're paying for your eye exam, if it's out of pocket, you're getting that. And if you need the screening test, then you know, we have that discussion. If you have zero insurance, sure, it's out of pocket. But if you have insurance, typically medical insurance, it's going to cover.
All right.
And that's the other interesting point here. When we talk about vision insurance versus medical insurance, when you are in a glaucoma suspect status, you've crossed that bridge into using your medical insurance for a medical condition. Mm. Just like high blood pressure is a medical condition.
Oh, okay.
Since we talked about cannabis, is there a connection between tobacco, smoking, and glaucoma?
For sure. You know, there is a, you know, we talked about the vascular, the risk factors, and again, the theories we touched on a little bit, but there's many theories that involve blood supply to the optic nerve in glaucoma. And for sure, tobacco smoking affects the way our blood gets moved through our body.
Yeah.
Well, I don't smoke anything, but I do drink. Does drinking affect it?
We don't actually have time for that answer.
Well,
if we're going through the vices, you know, like what affects it?
Yeah. Well, we are in wine country, and I have plenty of friends that use the excuse of drinking a glass of red wine to help their, to prevent their atherosclerosis. And so again, if we're going on that vascular theory, I guess might be a stretch, but maybe drinking one glass of wine a day could potentially help your decrease the atherosclerosis and increase the blood supply.
So the half a bottle of Chardonnay I had last night.
That's good for 2 days worth.
Right. Oh, okay. So, yeah. All right, great.
I did stress the word glass, not bottle.
Darn it. All right. I was so close.
Trying to stimulate the economy.
That's right.
Dr. David Simon with our Dr. Simon Says segment for this week. Tell us where your shop is.
Yeah, thank you. Well, we are right across from the Queen of the Valley Hospital. So if you're familiar with Napa, it's on off Trancas, and the address is 3260 Beard Road. So literally right across from the Queen of the Valley Hospital.
Outstanding. We'll see you next week.
Thank you so much.
Another good topic.
Well, in summary and conclusion, Dr. Simon says...
Well, you know, Dr. Simon says it is the same answer as last time. Dr. Simon says get your routine eye exam so we can identify these things early.
That's right.
Outstanding. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You're listening to the Wine Country Live Morning Show with Barry Martin
on KVON Napa, 1440 AM at KVON.com.